Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Dr. G, thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing great, Stephen. How are you doing?
Yeah, wonderful. Thanks for asking. Maybe you can just take a moment to let our viewers and listeners know what it is you do. What keeps you busy?
So I am a clinical and a forensic psychologist. My name is Dr. J.P. Garrison. I go by Dr. G. I have a YouTube channel called Dr. G Explains, where I talk about true crime, talk about body language. I am a personality disorder expert. I treat and evaluate personality disorders. And I also have a degree in counterterrorism and an MBA. So I keep myself busy with a lot of things.
Wow, that's a lot. A degree in counterterrorism. Mm-hmm. I suppose, just as a quick left field question before we delve into your expertise in narcissism, in terms of counterterrorism, what would you say represents the greatest threat to either the United States or globally in terms of terrorism in 2024?
Ooh, that's a great question. In 2024, because when I was doing it, it was back when there were, I think the it was a nightclub that had just been attacked by some far right.
I think that was the Pulse nightclub, was it not?
Right. Pulse nightclub.
He was an Islamist, Omar Mateen.
Right, and that was back. At this point, it's hard to say. It's all over the place. I think, as strange as this sounds, I think the internet and its ability to indoctrinate people probably poses the biggest threat, just in general. So there's not one specific group that I have. There's quite a few, actually.
Okay, I'm not sure if that's really unsettling or less unsettling, but to move on slightly, it seems that YouTube has afforded a wonderful platform for people such as yourself to sort of exhibit your, you know, kind of body language expertise and looking at people in, you know, high profile cases. It seems to be very popular a pastime, and it's quite entertaining as well. And I just wondered if you could give people a basic overview of like the sort of academic aspects of it, or the scientific aspects of it, because for some people they'll think it's a science. Other people will compare it to sort of reading tea leaves. What can you tell us to make it sound like a credible field of expertise?
So the body language that I have studied is all based in research. There's a lot of research on body language, a lot of good peer-reviewed research, actually. And a lot of that is based in the idea that humans are very good at survival. So the body language that we look for is twofold. One is when people make themselves more or less vulnerable, like the face and chest are places that are very vulnerable on us. If we get attacked, those are going to be the most vital parts. So when people cover or obscure those in some way, sometimes that can be telling. In addition to that, when people are feeling uncomfortable, they do things to pacify themselves. So if you're talking to somebody, you get sort of a baseline of how they normally act. And then you ask them a question and you presume, what if they're lying right now, and they start trying to calm themselves down? That's a difference in behavior you look for. And so then you can maybe identify when people are starting to be deceptive, misleading, things like that. But it's all very much based in cognitive science.
Does your presence now make friends and family slightly uncomfortable in the way they go into like straitjacket mode around you when during conversations?
Family, not so much, but friends do, actually. Yeah, because they know that I'm going to say something, because I can't help but point things out. I can be annoying in that way. So sure.
That's really funny. I've just had a great question in the chat, actually, from Fred Witherow. He's asked, do you play poker?
A little bit. Now, it's more just for fun. I can read people well, but I don't have a good poker face myself, so it doesn't do me as much good.
Fair enough. So I suppose, I mean, I've been looking at some of your YouTube output, and it's fascinating. And one of the things you covered, because we had hours and hours of footage, and I think the entire world was captivated by it, was this Johnny Depp, Amber Heard trial, very public and bitter legal dispute. And yeah. I just thinking with them being actors as well, that surely adds a second, third dimension, perhaps in the fact that they are used to having, you know, high resolution cameras this close to the face, and their job is to convey an emotion. So they're very good at representing emotion. So how is it possible to really get a handle on what they're doing body language wise when their entire reason for existence normally is to convey something they're not actually feeling?
It's much more challenging. That's a great point. So people that are really practiced at acting lying, trying to convey emotions that they aren't necessarily experiencing are going to be much harder to read with body language, because what we're looking at is a manifestation of emotion or an attempt to soothe emotions. So actors can be better at that, but you also have to be a really good actor to pull it off convincingly. And not everybody is, even actors. So sometimes they get things a little bit wrong. And when people start getting anxious, or when people are on the stand, like in the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial, when they were pressed and anger or other emotions would push through that would sort of overwhelm what they maybe wanted to portray, you could see a different dimension than maybe what they were trying to do.
Well, I mean, I know it was a while ago, but people are still very fascinated in this sure. couple and this case. I mean, just focusing on Johnny Depp perhaps for mm-hmm. a moment, what are some of the things that jumped out about you that you managed to get from his body language, which you thought, that's interesting, that conveys something that's quite revealing?
I'm trying to remember myself. You know, some of it is, I thought people were a little bit soft on Johnny Depp. So I actually covered Johnny Depp a good bit because people were more focused on Amber Heard, which there was plenty to cover there. Don't get me wrong, but people didn't focus as much on Johnny Depp. And there was one of the things that it seemed that he would do, at least my observation was, it seemed that he would talk down to attorneys in a certain way. He would try to make himself seem sympathetic at times when it didn't really make much sense. And he would be, patronizing at other times. There was body language that suggested that suggests a certain level of haughtiness and things like that at times.
Yeah, I caught that as well, for sure. And in terms of Amber Heard, I mean, she seemed to have the worst deal publicly, even before the verdict. A lot of people would turn on her. There was a lot of memes going around mocking her insincerity, pointing out the fact that she's an actress and not a particularly good one, was the kind of uncharitable conclusion people were making. What did you make of her?
Hers was actually very challenging, because I think there were aspects of what she showed that could have been very genuine, but they were combined with this performance to maybe seem like she was feeling more than she was at times. So it was confusing. So it wasn't like everything was 100% inauthentic necessarily, but it was so performative that it overshadowed anything that might have been real in there. So it was just, she sort of overwhelmed people with this strange sort of behavior.
Yeah. I mean, is there a higher correlation with narcissism in the entertainment industry and celebrities? And if so, what in your view would explain that?
100% there is, because it attracts people that think they're special. So part of understanding narcissism is understanding that the cornerstone of narcissism is grandiosity. It's people that genuinely believe they are better than other people. And so that is going to, people like that are going to gravitate to politics, to acting, the places where everybody can see how special they are, because they feel it. So you're going to have a disproportionate number of narcissists coming out of Hollywood, no question.
And I suppose, and the narcissist has this really grand opinion of themselves, I suppose, that, you know, they feel that they are special in some way, as you pointed out, they can do no wrong. What kind of things can they do behavior-wise when that perception sort of challenge? How does that manifest in either their body language or the things they say, you know, behavior-wise?
So one of the things we see with their body language, they'll invade other people's space. They will be very expansive. They will try to be the biggest person in the room. And so one of the things that we'll see in terms of the body language, like if it's in a relationship, for example, they'll do things to make other people feel smaller. Like if they know that somebody wants to be left alone, they'll find subtle ways to manipulate and irritate or to get close. They'll do things knowing it's going to bother somebody else. Nothing bothers a narcissist more than seeing someone else feel calm and feel good. Like if there's a couple, one person's a narcissist, the other person's doing fine, and they're sitting there enjoying their day, the narcissist will find a way to go like, huh, did you really decide to wear that shirt today or something? You know, they'll come up with some way to make them feel off kilter and make sure they're feeling unsettled. So they have a lot of different ways to get at people.
That's really interesting. And I've just thought now, actually, in terms of narcissism, I mean, it seems like it's probably a lot more common than people suspect. And I was just wondering, is there sort of any kind of evolutionary psychology on this, at what kind of, you know, function it might serve, why people might evolve to be narcissists? Does it offer opportunities or a certain adaptations that could be useful?
They do make good leaders because they don't care. They have enough. Now, let me rephrase that. They lack empathy to the point that they can tell people to do things and they're not worried about their well-being. So we see lots of world leaders that are narcissists. There was some research that suggests, and I don't know how accurate this is, that had researched U.S. presidents back a few decades and basically had had come to the conclusion that they all likely had some degree of pathological narcissism. So they do make good leaders, just like people with borderline personality make good followers. So they make great soldiers. A guy with a borderline personality that is willing to run into battle and risk his life for this, for their leader, to a degree that is pathological, not like a normal soldier, but one that's really wild. Like there's an adaptive function to that too. So all of these personality disorders, awful for relationships universally, but they do have their roles. They do work well in certain roles.
It's interesting to think that civilization might depend on the convergence of several personality disorders. Yeah, I mean, the politics one's fascinating. I can think of a few people off the top of my head it might relate to. But I mean, what have you observed over the last few election cycles in terms of which leaders exhibit this sort of narcissistic personality disorder?
I'm most obviously familiar with U.S. politics, but if we go back the past few presidents we've had, or if I think about like Bill Clinton, Obama, Trump, they all show signs of narcissism. They all seem to think that they are special to a degree that they have different types of charisma, though. That's the most distinguishing factor. I've really had people be upset with me when I've suggested that Obama likely has some narcissistic tendencies. So they're like, yeah, but he seems so nice. It's like, well, he's got a better sense of audience than someone like Donald Trump does, but that doesn't mean that he's not also a narcissist.
So, I mean, how does it fall, narcissism, on the spectrum? I mean, I'm assuming there are different kind of gradations of it to an extent.
Mm-hmm. So the spectrum of narcissism, if we were to look at it, there's narcissistic personality disorder, which would be its worst form. Personality disorders, which I can explain if need be, but in essence, they are when one aspect of the personality is so strong and so dysfunctional, it overwhelms the rest of the personality. That's just the dominant trait. So for someone with like borderline personality, the dominant trait there is instability. So their instability dominates everything else. What they lack the most is proportionality. Nothing is proportional that they react to. With narcissism, grandiosity dominates everything. And a lack of equality is their biggest deficiency. They don't understand the concept. They truly don't understand the concept of equality because everybody is less than they are, unless maybe you're special like them. And then you get to qualify as being on their level.
There's a lot of people as well who will look at personality disorders now and say, you know, that the prevalence of it in the common era is just a kind of product of a moddy cuddling society. Everyone's got an issue now. Everyone's got something that they can put in their biography on Twitter, for instance. And I mean, how much of that do you think is true? Or is it a case of we've simply just got better at understanding and diagnosing these personality disorders?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that we definitely are much better at identifying it now. We're able to categorize pathological behavior and say, hey, like that person's not just eccentric. That's a problem of some kind. So I think that in some ways we're able to identify these things better. In others, I think that people use these terms very commonly where they may not fully apply, where somebody may be acting narcissistic, but they're not a literal narcissist. There is a difference between somebody who is a bit self-involved, a bit grandiose, versus someone who sees human beings as objects to get their needs met. Like they genuinely lack empathy so great they can't understand what it feels like for the average person. So I think the percentages are probably the same as they've always been.
I mean, it seems like there's a little, I mean, I got a very low level understanding of this, but it seems like there's a slight crossover between perhaps sociopathy and narcissism. I mean, how do we distinguish between the two then if empathy is one of the main, you know, correlations?
That's a great question. The biggest difference, there is a lot of overlap. So being a sociopath or antisocial personality disorder, that tends to be the bucket we put some of those people in, but it's not always the case. You can be a narcissist and be someone who's a sociopath and just be a narcissist. One of the things that I do on my channel is evaluate a lot of psychopaths, murderers, people like that. And there are plenty of them that if you were to give them a diagnosis, narcissistic personality would be the primary one. But they're all part of the same cluster of personality disorders. It's called cluster B, which is histrionic, I know it gets complicated, but histrionic, borderline, narcissistic, and antisocial. And anybody who meets any of those probably has some traits of the other ones too. It's the whole cluster sort of comes together. It's just which one is the most dominant of those bunch.
That's fascinating. And I mean, who's really interesting to look back at in terms of, you know, a prolific kind of serial killer or murderer, perhaps, that we've got footage of that perhaps at the time wasn't evaluated because the, you know, the field of study wasn't as advanced as it is now. There wasn't as many people looking into it. Who's interesting to look back at now and apply these tools and say, ah, I think I can see a pattern of narcissism here?
One of the guys that I think is most interesting, there was a serial killer that, like, every horror movie in the 80s was basically based on this guy named Edmund Kemper. He was an American serial killer in the early 70s, otherwise known as the co-ed killer. Extremely charismatic, kind of nerdy, but for whatever reason, very likable. And the things that he did are beyond description. I won't go into any of them now because they're truly awful. Like, he was beyond, he's as bad as any human being I can think of. But when you watch him talk, you kind of want to like the guy. You kind of get drawn in by him. And part of what I try to do on my channel is explain to people how to not get drawn in by this stuff, because it's hard sometimes not to like a charismatic narcissist. You want to like them because they make themselves likable until you're in a personal relationship with them. And then you realize, okay, this is not so great. But superficially, you want to like these folks. But yeah, Edmund Kemper is a good example of that.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I will definitely add that one to my list. That's not something I'm familiar with. I suppose in terms of that, you know, charismatic killer, I think Ted Bundy probably had a bit of that. So, I mean, that's interesting to me how you say you spend a lot of time trying to school people on how not to be sucked into that kind of thing. Because I'm a people person. Whenever I meet a person, I want to like them. I want to, you know, be happy about being in this person's presence. They have to do quite a bit for me to not like them. So how would you kind of help people guard against people who have got like a narcissistic traits?
People will oftentimes tell you who they are. Narcissists generally don't try to hide it. So when somebody says, like, tells you that they're self-involved or that they really that they care more about themselves than other people, listen to them. Even if they're saying it in a joking way, go, you know what? If you're telling me that you're awful, I'm going to actually believe you. Because a lot of these folks will tell you that. Then they'll play it off like it's a joke. But people will oftentimes tell you exactly who they are. So listen to them.
I mean, that's fascinating how they might play it off as a joke, because you'd think good humor or effective humor probably relies on some feeling or understanding of the human condition and human emotions and human empathy and stuff like that. I mean, so is it just a case of that maybe narcissists have just got good at manipulating with humor?
Yeah, they know how, they have enough empathy to manipulate people, but that's pretty much it. They don't actually feel what you feel in the sense that, like, if they've made you feel bad, that they're going to be affected by that, but they understand people's feelings and emotions well enough to manipulate them. So that's really their core, is they are master manipulators. They're very good at it.
So I don't know if this is somebody or somebody's rather you've been keeping an eye on, but we had a huge, in the UK rather, a huge fascination and media circus around Meghan Markle and the other one whose name's just eluded me, Prince Harry, of course. This is, you can tell I'm a big monarchist. Mm-hmm. And they were not particularly popular in the UK, and then they went and moved to America. Sorry about that. And they have also been at the center of a lot of American media interest as well. A lot of people specifically looking at Meghan and reading certain things. She's obviously got the actress background. Is this somebody who you've looked at all in this regard?
I haven't looked at her a lot because I focus so much on true crime. There's certain people that I see, and this sounds kind of strange, actually. There's certain people that I see that bother me more than some of the murderers and psychopaths.
Wow.
So I haven't followed a ton of it. There are aspects of Meghan Markle, just from the bits I've seen, because I haven't followed it closely, so I haven't like done like this thorough analysis, but there are aspects of her that sort of immediately feel, they don't feel genuine. And a lot of us pick up on that very quickly. Humans are very good at figuring out if somebody's being authentic. And there's something even in passing about her. And once again, this is not some sort of deep analysis. This is just my passing observation that feels inauthentic.
Yeah, I would tend to agree on that for sure. And you started this conversation by, when we briefly touched on counter-extremism, by pointing to the issue of social media and what that's creating and how, what frightens me particularly about is the fact that it doesn't matter what view you have or how extreme it is or how untethered from reality it is, you can find enough people online who will reinforce that view and be part of your tribe, and you can kind of live in a little echo chamber of any flavor. And I was just wondering what sort of thing is, what's that doing social media to our mental health, and how does that relate to narcissism?
It's not doing much good for our mental health. I can say that for sure. I don't mind the concept of social media, but exactly what you're talking about is happening, which is that we're taking bizarre or illegitimate positions, and you have enough people that agree with it, that then you have an echo chamber saying, yeah, your completely stupid position is great. You should just follow this position to eternity. And then people do, and then they no longer can function with other people. So we see it's the vast majority of people that interact with social media, I think it's fine, but there is definitely percentages of people that are getting pulled to the extremes in a variety of ways, left, right. I would say it's center, but if you're center, you're not getting pulled anywhere, but that are on the far degrees of the spectrum politically and otherwise. And we are seeing, I think the vast majority of us are fine with social media, but when you take people that are vulnerable, that's really the key issue is if somebody's vulnerable, it can pull you in ways that can, be very destructive.
Yeah, I think a few years ago, well, more than a few years ago, I was a little bit dismissive of this issue in the sense that I'd say, you know, all the extreme views we see online playing out, that's not really real life. You know, you open the front door and you walk outside and all that suddenly goes away. And there's the real world where there are reasonable people to a certain extent doing reasonable people things. Doesn't feel like that's quite so true anymore, does it? It feels like this kind of online world, this online mentality is kind of spilling over into our politics, into our academia. Is that something you would say is fair?
Absolutely. And the scariest part of it to me is, I'm sure there's people who've researched this a lot more than I have, but what percentage of people are even real people that people are interacting with online? I mean, there's bots and stuff that specifically are there to help divide people. Things like Facebook. The problems I have with social media is I think that some of the algorithms like people arguing, because I've noticed sometimes if I'm on Facebook or something, it will send me articles that, if I was to respond, I would definitely be arguing with somebody. I'm like, I'm not engaging with this because I feel like it's trying to get me to argue and I don't want to do it. But it's this tendency to get us irritated with people that disagree with us and then find people that agree with more extreme views that we have. It's just, I don't know if that's by design or if that's just how it's played out, but it's really unfortunate, I think.
How much stock do you put in this idea of foreign manipulation in terms of trying a new kind of form of warfare, sort of digital manipulation, and getting us all fighting on social media while they dominate? I mean, I imagine there's a certain extent of that. I imagine there's a certain amount of it, but how high up and how prevalent it is, I don't know. What's your kind of handle on that sort of thing?
My feeling is that there's a lot of that going on. I think that gets these conversations started and then idiots take over that are real people and that are and echo these ideas. Because I've seen otherwise rational people talk about some pretty stupid things that I feel like, you know, may have gotten started by what you're talking about, like, you know, foreign actors in some way trying to cause harm and it working. But I don't think that it's exclusively that. But I do think there has to be a large component of that, but this is not research-based. This is an assumption I'm making, but I think logically it's hard to imagine that's not happening quite a lot.
Have you done much reflection in this regard in terms of narcissism and, you know, charismatic serial killers on perhaps Charles Manson, one of the most notorious people, didn't actually kill anyone directly himself, obviously was in prison for the influencing others to carry out murders. And he seems in the video footage I've seen a very interesting, often humorous, entertaining, you know, smart, philosophical individual, batshit crazy as well. Yeah. But very interesting. What kind of things have you thought watching his behavior in interviews?
Well, I've watched quite a bit of Charles Manson. I think that he's sort of fascinating in the sense that we know that some of what he does is a performance. There's an interview that he did with, I think it was Diane Sawyer, where if you watch the whole thing afterward, they actually show, they take a break and he's like talking about how he's kind of playing. He's like, did I do a good job? Kind of like, you know, playing it up. So, I mean, he very much does try to play this role of this evil, crazy guy. Now, he was crazy and he definitely was not a good person at all, but he's a hard one to read because so much of it is a performance. But I genuinely believe he was a horrible person. So, like, I'm not defending him in any way.
Yeah, let's just get the disclaimer out here. Not fans of Charles Manson in any way, for sure. Just had another great question in the chat. A Nexus has asked, since the lockdowns, has Dr. G observed more people's disorders are more visible? So, I mean, has lockdown had an effect in that regard?
On anxiety, yes. Anxiety has been through the roof. And I'm seeing that manifest in different ways because people are spending a lot more time alone now. A lot more people are... And I don't criticize working from home. I think it's great if you can do it. You know, that's not a bad thing. But I am seeing when people, particularly that are living alone or that don't, you know, not partnered up or don't have families or whatever, that are just by themselves, like, you know, the vast majority of hours of the week, it's making anxiety worse. So I definitely think that at least for anxiety and depression as well, we're seeing an uptick of that ever since the pandemic started. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. And just getting back to this problem of social media and falling into silos and perhaps going down conspiratorial routes and going too extreme left or right, what's the solution to this? Because it seems like social media as a phenomenon in human civilization is a very new thing. It's in its infancy. We all quite don't know what we've got yet in that regard. We don't quite know the extent of the damage it can cause. Is this something that needs to be taught in schools in terms of how to manage screen time, or do we need more emphasis on critical thinking, perhaps, so that we can spot fake news and conspiracies and things like that?
Yes, but we got to make sure the critical thinking is coming from the right person. Therein lies the issue, is what type of critical thinking do we use? I think critical thinking is extremely important, but at the same time, you know, okay, let me explain it this way. The smarter somebody is, once they believe something ridiculous, the more they will defend it. And so we have people, even very good critical thinkers, who believe things that are completely ridiculous and will defend it tooth and nail because they know that they're smart. They're used to critically thinking. So once they've become convinced of this, then they double down on something that might be totally wrong. So it's very hard, but yes, we need to critical thinking, and teaching critical thinking is extremely important. I don't think less screen time is necessarily the solution because I don't think that's inherently the problem. I think the problem is that we need to feel comfortable saying to extreme voices, like, that's extreme. I'm not going to listen to you. That's the solution, is to take extreme voices and go, okay, that's an extreme position. I'm not interested in that. So getting a little closer to the center, I think, is probably the solution.
Okay. So you spent a bit of time obviously looking at Johnny Depp and Amber Heard in the past. Is there anyone else in the public eye who's in the entertainment industry who's caught your eye recently? You thought this person is worth observing for certain reasons?
Oh, that's a good question. There's a lot of people in Hollywood, and I'm not trying to sound negative here, but I just don't like. There's people that just give me a bad vibe. Somebody,
name and shame.
Sorry, say that again.
Name and shame.
Yeah, right. Well, now one person, and just to be super, super clear what I'm saying here, I was watching Jimmy Kimmel and Aaron Rodgers talking about, like, all this Epstein stuff. This is not related to any of that because this goes far back. But, like, Jimmy Kimmel, for example, is somebody who I have a distinct dislike for. I don't like the energy he gives off. He feels like sort of a hypocrite. Like, there's certain people that I just don't like. Ellen was like that too. I did not like her from the beginning. It was no question that once people started saying things about her, it's like, yes, obviously she is like this. Once again, she seems to have worn it on her sleeve that she seems to be that type of person. So I was no shock that when people were like, yeah, she's really mean, we don't like her. There's a number of people in Hollywood that give me that feel. But Jimmy Kimmel's the first one to come to mind just because I've been seeing him in the news. But I don't think there's anything related to him in the Epstein stuff. That's totally immaterial to what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think the other Jimmy does that for me. Jimmy Fallon, I find him very insincere.
Yeah.
Okay, so in terms of... You know, I'm really fascinated by this idea of social media. And I mean, is there a case to be made in some way that perhaps the data accrued over social media over the last decade might be one of the biggest case studies we've ever had in terms of data for kind of personality disorders and things like that? There seems to be a high correlation with very online individuals and personality disorders, in my experience.
Absolutely. The question is if we're to get good research on it, we also need to know in what ways, and let me figure out how to phrase this, but it's sort of how the engagement's been manipulated by the people who run it. Like Twitter, for example, is just a cesspool, pretty much. Not always, but I mean, there's plenty of good people on there, but somehow when I would get on there, it just seemed like just angry, vicious people just attacking each other half the time. And so it's like, was that by design or is that just because people are angry and vicious, right? So if we can know sort of if these are just pure interactions with people and all that, I just, okay, to answer your question more cleanly, yes, there's a ton of, we can more understand more about the human condition than we've ever been able to if we could collect all this data from social media. But that also includes being aware of, you know, that they want us to argue and engage with each other. So that adds to it.
Excellent. Well, Dr. G, this is flown by. If people wanted to find out more about you and more of your work, where would they go?
DrGExplains.com is my website. I've got some content on there if people are interested, and I have a couple of courses. I have a course on body language, but Dr. G Explains on YouTube is the best place to find me. I'm always creating new content, analyzing mostly true crime, but sometimes other things as well. Talk a lot about body language and narcissism and things like that. So yeah, right here on YouTube is the best place to find me.
Wonderful. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for speaking to us.
You bet. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Take care.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.